dinosaurs went someplace no one's sure. Nobody can find them anymore. Seeing just their footprints, bones, and fossils sure is strange. Isn't it interesting how the world can change? Isn't it interesting how the world can change? Isn't it interesting how the world can change?
Peter, the poet. Excuse me while I get control of these consoles and knobs in front of me. Yes, it is not Wednesday, of course, but Saturday. And this is Peter. Playing tricks on myself.
Oh.
WGDR, Plainfield, Vermont. Sound that you hear in the background is as ancient as those dinosaurs that Britain's last song sung about. Old Mr. Mackle Hackle from California. Heron's Choice Award. Thank you, Britain. We'll continue on the dinosaur theme later. We'll pick it up, I should say. But surely the sound of the didgeridoo, which is the sound of a hollow space excavated by termites, paying attention to the natural structure of the tree. A sound not unsimilar, a shape, a space, not unsimilar to the sonic cavities of some of those dinosaurs. This is an ancient sound. An ancient sound. Trees like to grow in a helical cone, which termites will follow when they hollow their home. It is this twisted passage that gives the rich tone of a didge or a drone pipe when properly blown. And this is the D. And this, oh, I love this one. This is the B flat. Oh, yes, this is my favorite. And here's the D. So, with, against the D's and B flats of Northern Territory stringy bark, we proceed with the day. I suppose I should say that what you are about to hear does not reflect an official opinion of WGDR or its licensee, Goddard College, but presents the opinions of participants, quotees, you might call them, and producers. And not, as I say, an official opinion of WGDR or its licensee, Goddard College. I get the sense of a long, lingering prime among the most intense, we think, of all time. Or are we merely leaf-stunned, dear friend? you decide. This, let me warn you, is the season when you are likely to find cars abandoned, doors flung wide open, when leaf-stunned occupants stand with beatific smiles, clutching a camera with tears in their eyes in front of some burning bush framed in purple. And I must say, I'm part of that smiling circle. What more could one want than to be stopped at Prime in central Vermont? There is an ecstatic part to being a poet. That which comes from art returns to art. Tell me, where does a circle start? But with you, dear friend, with a casual remark, where we see a skeletal poem starkly posed, the metered phloem, where common conversation flows. Never knowing its own prosody, these gems are there for those who'll see. Word flowers, wind-blown seeds, we grow rows of poetry. And from the BBC this morning, what percentage would you settle for? Comes the reporter's leading question. It's the environment, stupid. He bristles at the greed suggestion. It's all about cash. They're destroying the Niger Delta, where we must live our lives, alas. And what they've done to our homes and rivers is utterly crass. The leader of the Nigerian rebels has an active gray mass. This bodes well for how things may come to pass against corporate oil. Their destruction has been so vast, we've been forced to act at last, to recoil. And these are quotes from this morning's BBC. This is a large offensive. Thousands of American troops. Negroponte gets aggressive with the so-called insurgent groups who are really, really freedom fighters. Another NIST media scoop. But everyone is furious with the Americans and their dupes. Bush is getting scalded in his own boiling soup. And the neocons are sliding down their pile of election poop. In bringing freedom with overwhelming force, paradoxically, American snipers are the source of most civilians shot. We call them sharpshooters, of course. The media will not refer to them as snipers, vipers who've been taught to kill. Amazing how freedom is willing to use any technique. And then, what is freedom when leadership reeks? This is Peter the Poet, the show spanning the chasm, although bridging the schism, plumbing the fathoms with a poetic spasm of skepticism will do. That's your decision. And I hold, as Baldwin held true, when leadership has lied or failed to prove a moral guide, look to the oral poet, rely on the voice which rides the tide of rhyme. We are the moral arbiters of time. The leadership will lie forgot before our reckoning line is fully wrought. Yes, dear friends, what you have caught is the radio of thought. And it's not for this age that we shine, we who write for all of time are created for all age, refined by the demands of common outrage. It's the oracular instinct laid on a clean page. Yes, Delphic diction takes the center stage. Leadership will cringe before our metric gaze, our stinging remark. Let me remind you, friend, poetry is high art, archetypal free speech, armor piercing dart. We only bomb terrorists. There are no civilian deaths. Although, TV footage of dead children amid the rubble suggests the Army's assessment is without any factual basis at best. Further, don't dead children pass everyone's murder test? We went with massive force into Samara's deadly hole, and as you may suspect, of course, are not yet fully in control. Since massive force does not convince either the human mind or soul. What cause? What cause remains noble once it starts killing? Either local or global, once it is willing to sacrifice life in a self-fulfilling prophecy, nobility gets the knife. CBS is no longer in the practice of journalism, and have fallen into the evil axis of Republican paternalism, not wanting to offend Mr. Bush with the ruthless truth, and for that they are willing to kill off their golden goose. The Iraq agenda was dreamed up years before 9/11. So was Pearl Harbor heritage. We are not so dumb. Why is Bush so afraid of the International Criminal Court? That is a direct quote from Robert Fisk. So these poems come from Democracy Now! Why is Bush so afraid of the International Criminal Court? He might find himself in front of it, so now he must resort to destroying it, aborting it. Yes, the parallels are grim. Before international tort catches up to him. And to quote Mr. Bush in his own defense, vis-a-vis our duty to our children, it's not just Iraq, Mr. Bush, but the bewildered globe. Duty to our children, with the mercury we throw, with the greenhouse gas emissions continuing to grow, with the herbicides and pesticides caught in the persistent blow of atmospheric circulation. So female breast milk, as you know, is now a toxic, neurotoxic brew. vis-a-vis our duty to our children. If only you knew. And to quote Mr. Fisk, the stench is overpowering, but not less is the shriek of grief, an all-devouring sense of death. It's the Iraqi people who are suffering. Confess. It's not a subject for debate, and I would suggest reporters are merely mouthpieces at best. No challenges, no questions which will test the moral substance. And why? I guess we have the bloody mess we do. Iraq is a disaster. True, history repeats itself. To prove, the imperial agenda in Iraq will always, always lose. This is WGDR, Plainfield, Vermont, broadcasting from the vaults of Goddard College. At the height of a daunting autumn foliage, the free-form alternative, and to the best of my knowledge, the finest radio allegedly to be caught in central Vermont. And now, dear friends, worldwide, on the much vaunted internet, now on radioforall.net, spanning the chasm gets dragged into the most postmodern age. But not to the extent of giving up the penciled page, but of letting voice engage mind directly on the digital stage without the ineffective music of the printed cage, where prosody is lost in a most prosaic way. Here, the pace of language languishing on a graceful, thoughtful phrase, and not the thoughtless pieces racing through our TV anguished day. Here, we take care over the things we have to say. WGDR grazing across the media gray in a colophony of fall. And now, on Radio for All. That's the number 4 in radioforall.net. Hey, how hot can you get? Jason's hands down. But first impressions can be ground away by constant repetition. Hey, it was a close tie. What a tight competition. Say, you can be sure all the Spinmeisters will make the morning edition. And now, Lush Rimbaugh even pipes in with whole volumes more of John Kerry perdition. One thing for sure, this media manipulation is getting utterly vicious. All to convince you, dear friend, to join in to their holy mission. But you, in the end, should stick to your first decision and ignore the mind-numbing, much-repeated Mercodian, Murdochian, Pox Television. And to quote Mr. Bush, we'll always go on the offensive while spreading liberty, goes Mr. Bush's Terminator guise. We'll never be defensive. We'll never apologize. Apparently, being wrong is not George Bush's style. The corporate media is full of great debate. Sorry to be tedious, but let there be no mistake. It is a great error to state that this is so. It may be faux debate, but debate? No. Bush is now involved in retaking Iraq, starting with Samarra. Bush's leadership knack. The election is coming, so it's time to attack. This has more to do with polls back home, with scant regard for civilians clearly being shown. These are real Iraqi lives that are being blown apart. That is shameful. And no high-tech precision art can avoid the moral blameful right through George Bush's heart. It's hypocritical to record the detailed fact of Sudan's genocide in Darfur, but not to record innocent lives killed in Iraq, in George Bush's vicious little war. Thank you. Robert J. Lertzema, master of the pregnant pause, silence between phrases, and absences of clause, where absences are called for. The prosodial laws, language done at leisure, the treasure, no applause. Just how the measured frame of language always was, and how it shall be again. Why comes an arcane just because?
Wittich, Wittich, rainbow serpent.
And of course, the didgeridoo, blown by the proper lips, is the voice of the rainbow serpent, God. And to the Yolngu of North Australia, Wittich is the profane name of the rainbow serpent. Profane meaning it can be used in public. I will not use the secret name here. The poetic word for this late morning hour. Speak what you observe, tell the truth to power, let verbal sweet balance brutal sour. United we stand, alone we cower. But Mr. Bush answers, climbing the mountains of war to get to the valley of peace. And that's a direct quote. Climbing the mountains of war to get to the valley of peace, ignoring the corporate core of the military congressional beast, which is robbing the nation's store. Wasting what's needed for social increase on high-tech baubles of horror. Modern hatred force-fed such a feast. Mountain tops have been removed, then used to fill the valley of peace with such volumes of rubble, which will only deliver on the double. War without cease and endless trouble. Bush's bubble is set to burst. All progress promised is already reversed. And Bush will leave us a nation eternally cursed. The big news, to quote NPR, the big news is not the debate, but the rapid response teams as the spin machine takes over. their job to spell out just why their man is appropriate to remake an imbecile into a half-baked success, which will be faked and ballyhooed by the right-wing press as each tries to generate the best light on a very sordid scheme. This was no debate, but a staged, managed scene. There is only one winner: the corporate monopoly on American power, using a deflective duopoly to distract the populi while they devour our democracy. There was a debate over a debate, but no debate ensued. And wait. Didn't those cameramen break the agreed-on rules? I mean, splitting the screen to show Bush, that colossal fool, standing between his sound bites, alternately drooling and looking cruel, while Kerry looked so presidential, I mean, so cool. But where was the debate? Well, it proved to be a fake when the details are reviewed. But, dear friends, the truth, as it stands to date, if we don't change our head of state, then the whole world is screwed. American tanks on Arab streets, in Palestine, in Iraq, not too discreet, using modern weaponry on the undefended, the weak, is viciously immoral. Well, what you sow, you shall reap, and Bush's war crimes will surely keep the cycle of violence and revenge leaping ahead, so to speak. But no, the economy is strong and getting stronger. Wrong. It's worse, says Kerry, looking somber. We can't take Bush's debt much longer. We've gone from Democratic surplus to Republican deficit due to this colossal warmonger. The fairness doctrine needs to be reinstituted. By now, we should all agree, because the corporate media has prostituted the FCC. Now, fairness has been transmuted. As Murdoch sees, we see. Pox reaches all the stupid, but their speech is scarcely free. ¶¶ Vermont's highways have been sealed and supersized because vehicle speed is more highly prized than farmers' field. As pro-corporate policy gets realized at the expense of nature's yield, as the ecosystem gets revised, sealed under an impervious tarmac shield. I ask you, is this really wise? The two Simonis had covers over their eyes which they could not lift, but their captors then apologized and gave each one a parting gift, a box of sweets for their freedom's trip to repair the rift. That doesn't sound like Alawi or the Negroponte grip, if you catch my drift. Music and poetry have a common role. They are rhythmic creations that nurture the soul. They are the imaginations of the common whole, fueled by respiration alone, not oil and not coal, no greenhouse gas toll to pay, just a tale to tell and a tune to play. Parental care in an ornithixian dinosaur. Crocodilians and birds show extensive parental care of their young, but whether this behavior evolved independently in these two groups of living archosaurs is unknown. in part because features of parenting among related fossil groups such as dinosaurs are unclear. The dramatic specimen of a small ornithischian dinosaur, Psittacosaurus species, at the Dalian Natural History Museum, specimen D2156, from Liaoning in China, reveals a single adult clustered with 34 juveniles within an area of 0.5 square meters, providing strong evidence for post-hatching parental care in dinosauria. The Lower Cretaceous Yixian Formation, famous for its exceptionally well-preserved feathered dinosaurs and birds consisting primarily of thinly layered lacustrine beds intercalcated with volcanic deposits, as well as more massive units in the Lugiantun beds near its base. The new specimen comes from a small outcrop of variegated mudstones with root traces and gradational contacts from the lowest portions of the formation near Shangguan in western Liaoning. The find consists of 34 articulated juveniles closely associated with an adult. The specimen is in gray-red mudstone with clasts of volcanic fragments and minerals, feldspars and quartz. The unit is devoid of sedimentary structures apart from drab burrow mottling. Color, composition, texture and sedimentary structures of this and adjacent units are consistent with the incipient development of almost neutral to slightly acidic soils on volcanically derived sediments. There are no isolated bones or partial skeletons in the specimen, except those damaged by recent pre-discovery erosion or excavation error. Juveniles show a consistent pattern of preservation. Their skeletons have dorsal vertebrae, ribs and pelvis with dorsal side up, and fore and hind limbs rest in lifelike poses with humeri and femora splayed and remaining portions folded below. The juveniles are all of similar size, with femora ranging over 30 to 34 millimeters, although postcrania commonly overlap one another. The skulls remain free from overlying skeletons. The adult rests in a similarly articulated and upright pose. Visible elements include the skull, dorsal vertebrae, ribs, and the dorsal portions of the scapula. The cervical series and posterior portion of the body are absent, probably lost to recent erosion. Portions of four juveniles overlie the rest of the skeletons, but like the juveniles, the adult head is slightly raised and uncovered. In contrast, a typical Yixian formation skeleton, such as Sinosauropteryx, which are flattened between thin lacustrine strata, these Psittacosaurus retain a three-dimensional form and occur in more massive units. This posture is frequently seen in other vertebrate specimens in the lower Lugiantun beds. The lack of disarticulation, weathering, scavenging, and other disturbances indicates minimal subaerial exposure. The consistently lifelike postures and skulls free of overlapping skeletons rules out significant transport and suggests that the Psittacosaurus were rapidly entombed while still alive. Death scenarios might include burial by volcanic debris, entrapment in a collapsed underground burrow, or flooding of a nest or other surface excavation. The absence of glass and the poorly sorted nature of these sediments favor a rapid clastic deposition rather than burial by a volcanic ash fall, say a cliff falling down on top of them. The uniformity of the entombing sediments, perhaps, is a result of soil development and prevents identification of any definite event. The close association of the adult and juvenile skeletons is consistent with a biological relationship and post-hatching parental care. The temporal extent of this care depends upon the age differences between hatchlings and these juveniles. Hatchling size is unknown in Psittacosaurus. Nevertheless, juvenile bones from this specimen are fully ossified and well-formed. This, combined with bone development, slow growth rates, plus the overall size and number of young, indicates that post-hatching growth was substantial and parental care extensive. Parental care has been inferred for various dinosaurian lineages from nestlings with altricular bone tissue, assemblages of shed teeth and tooth-marked bone, and mixed-age bone beds. Although these interpretations have been challenged on histological and taphonomic grounds, the Psittacosaurus aggregation provides compelling evidence for post-hatching care among dinosaurs. Modern archosaurs are conscientious parents, and he's talking about crocodilians and birds. Modern archosaurs are conscientious parents, assisting their young in hatching, protecting them from predators, feeding them, and providing warmth and shelter. But given the disparity in ecology and physiology between crocodilians and birds, homology of their parental care is debatable. Discovery of similar aggregations for other dinosaurs would strengthen the idea that post-hatching parental care is the ancestral condition in Dinosauria, and therefore a homologous character among crocodilians and birds. This is an article on page 145 of the journal Nature, volume 431, for the 9th of September 2004. The article is by Qingjin Meng, Jinyuan Liu, David Varaccio, Timothy Huang, and Kunling Gao. And they are from the Dalian Natural History Museum in Dalian, China, from the Department of Earth Sciences at Montana State University, Bozeman, Montana, in the United States, and from the Paleo World Research Foundation, Asian Operation in Taipei, Taiwan. Interesting. Super fast muscles control dove's trill. Bird songs frequently contain trilling sounds that demand extremely fast vocalization control. Here we show that doves control their syrinx. What a wonderful word. S-Y-R-I-N-X. Their syrinx, a vocal organ that is unique to birds, by using super fast muscles. These muscles, which are similar to those that operate highly specialist acoustic organs, such as the rattle of the rattlesnake, are among the fastest vertebrate muscles known, and could be much more widespread than previously thought if they are principal muscle types being used to control bird songs. The syrinx of ring doves, Streptopelia rhysoria, generates a relatively simple, highly stereotyped song, the familiar cooing sound. The coo contains a trill whose elements are generated by rapid repetition rates of up to 30 hertz, that's cycles per second, 30 alternates per second. When doves coo, respiratory air flow excites membranes in the syrinx, causing them to vibrate. The vibrations depend on the tensions in the membranes, which is modified by activating two pairs of syringeal muscles. These muscle pairs act as antagonists. The tracheolateralis muscle causes the membranes to move out of the tracheal lumen, abduct, whereas the sternotrachealis muscles cause the membranes to slacken and adduct. We made simultaneous in vivo recordings of muscle activity and sound in cooing doves, and found that the electromyographic EMG activity of the tracheolateralis muscles correlated significantly more strongly with voiced rather than silent periods. Activating these muscles switches the sound on and not off as previously thought. By positioning the membrane in the airflow, we also found that modulation of the tracheolateralis muscles, EMG, correlated strongly with changes in sound frequency. The muscles change the tension in the membranes, which changes the frequency of the sound. A dove's trill cannot be achieved using typical vertebrate muscles, because they do not switch on and off fast enough to control the trill's brief sound elements, which are greater than or equal to 9 milliseconds. The syringeal muscles must also contract aerobically to power cooing sessions that can last for many minutes. These extreme requirements can be met only by aerobic superfast muscles. This muscle type is the fastest known invertebrates. Its twitch halftime its twitch halftime is less than 10 milliseconds, which is one or two orders of magnitude faster than that of typical locomotory muscles. Our measurements show that dove syringeal muscles attain superfast kinetics. The twitch half times of the tracheolateralis and the sternotracheolis muscles are... This is wonderful language. Excuse me for taking pleasure in it, even if I am mispronouncing them. The twitch half times for tracheolateralis and sternotrachealis muscles are 9.2 plus or minus 0.8 milliseconds and 10.3 plus or minus 1.7 milliseconds respectively, and the stimulus repetition rates necessary to obtain tetanic contraction are 200 to 275 hertz for trachealateralis and 200 to 400 hertz for sternotrachealis muscles. But, like all super-fast muscles, the syringeal muscles trade force for speed. They exert low twitch stresses. They exert, mind you, low twitch stresses. Trachearolatus at 8.0 plus or minus 4.8 kilonewtons per meter squared, and the sternotrachealis is at 20.6 plus or minus 15.7 kilonewtons per meter squared. Which is very low. We also subject the syringeal muscles to a playback signal based on the in vivo EMG pattern. During the simulated trill, both types of muscles modulate force as the silent intervals in the playback signal shorten from 12 to 3.5 milliseconds. Neither is able to relax completely between trill elements. Our results indicate that both muscles exert control directly at the syringeal membranes by altering the membrane position, which in turn alters membrane tension. The trachealateralis muscles pull the syringeal membranes apart, thereby allowing them to vibrate in the airflow, which supports indirect evidence that the syrinx is closed between trills. Syrinx is closed between trills. This control mode implies that gating is determined by the membrane position, and that membrane tension determines pitch. In our in vitro experiments show that both syringeal muscles have the superfast properties necessary to control individual sound elements during the dove's trill. Co-activation of the antagonistic muscles affords the bird very fast and accurate position control of the syringeal membranes, akin to saccadic eye and rapid arm movements. Birds modulate their songs extremely rapidly, with frequencies exceeding 100 hertz. Although the intrinsic non-linear properties of the Cyrenix add complexity to the level of motor control. Only muscle control can explain the fast but gradual modulations that underlie the extraordinary intraspecific variability and flexibility of phonation. I love this language. The stereotyped coos of doves are considered to be simple vocalizations among birds. But even doves use super fast muscle to control their song, given their added vocal complexity. Songbirds have probably evolved muscles that outperform the syringeal muscles of doves. Super fast muscle can no longer be considered a rare adaptation, found, for example, in the highly derived acoustic organs of the toadfish and rattlesnake. We suspect that super-fast vocal muscles are widespread among birds. And this is an article on page 146 of that same journal, but this is an article by Kuhn, Elmans, Igor Spiertz, Ulrike Müller, Johann von Leeuwen, and Franz Gohler. And they are from Experimental Zoology Group, Wageningen University, Wageningen, the Netherlands, and from the Department of Biology, University of Utah, in the United States.